Hey guys, welcome to the forum where science comes to socialize. Since this is our first show, I think we'll spend the first minute or so giving you a sense of what this podcast is all about. But for starters, I'm Aubrey, and my co-hosts here are Barbara and Cleo.
Hi.
So the three of us are staff members of the ISGP, or the Institute on Science for Global Policy.
And that's just the first of many acronyms.
Yes, we love acronyms here.
The ISGP holds conferences all over the world to create conversations between scientists, the public, and policymakers on a variety of science and society topics.
Yeah, three groups that never meet each other. Ever.
Right, and ultimately, the outcome of these conferences is a book that we make publicly available on the ISGP's website. But not everyone has the time to sit down and read a detail-oriented publication, so the forum was created to give interested individuals more readily available access to these conference outcomes.
We don't recommend reading books while driving, but listening to a podcast is much more advisable.
What we're going to do is talk about one paper that was written and debated at a particular ISGP conference so that we can deliver the prominent points straight to you. And if you want to have your voice heard on these topics, feel free to communicate with us on social media.
Tweet us at ISGPTweets with hashtag ISGPForum, or you could like us on Facebook at Institute on Science for Global Policy.
Correction, you definitely should like us on Facebook.
Agreed.
But of course. Anyway, today we'll start the series by discussing one debate from our signature series conference titled Food and the Environment that was held from October 5th through the 8th in 2014. The paper in question was written by Dr. Michael Hamm from Michigan State University, and if you want to check it out, you can visit our website and click on the Publications tab. The paper discussed how to maintain and develop farmland sustainability to enhance food security and also to inspire the next generation of farmers.
To make sure the next generation can actually farm, we need to have farmland for them to farm on.
Exactly. And in his paper, Dr. Hamm focused on regionalizing food systems to create and maintain a plausibly sustainable infrastructure for agriculture moving forward. He brings up the specific example of Central California, where we're growing a majority of the country's food, yet it's an area struggling with loads of resource and land degradation problems.
Yeah, as a Californian myself, I can tell you that us taking shorter showers is not saving the almond industry.
So, regionalizing the systems could, in a sense, bring more stability as regions would be self-sustaining with their food production.
It's a cool idea, but how?
Well, if more regions are growing more food, suddenly we're not relying on just Central California. It introduces resilience that we haven't previously explored.
And this is becoming increasingly important as farmland is becoming scarce for a variety of reasons across the US and the globe. Not only are we overworking the arable fertile land we currently farm, but the land use is shifting. So as populations and the number of hungry mouths are increasing, farmland is incidentally decreasing.
In fact, Dr. Hamm mentioned that the latest U.S. Census of Agriculture reported not only declining numbers of farms, but also declining amounts of total farmland. And this isn't just the small farmers, but farms of all size categories.
Right. The bigger the city, the less farmland you have around it. And also, if you think about it this way, the more people that flock into the city, the less people there are in the rural areas to physically farm, putting more strain on the agricultural community.
Especially in more underdeveloped regions internationally, we're seeing that as they become less rural and more urban, younger generations aren't choosing to farm and are instead moving to the cities, increasing population and continuing to decrease self-reliant food sources.
Which is why Dr. Hamm sees this regionalizing of food systems as a pivotal way to save our future agricultural system.
But moving to the city isn't a be-all end-all. I mean, the debaters talked a bit about urban horticulture practices in large U.S. cities such as Detroit, and how these modern forms of agriculture could contribute to allowing all regions to foster their own food systems.
While it's a great idea with loads of potential, there are various challenges associated with agricultural development in the urban setting. One of the main challenges includes obtaining enough energy to cultivate in unconventional areas while still maintaining a green operation.
We also have to take certain safety concerns into consideration, ones that might be unique to growing food in cities, such as lead contamination.
Yeah, we don't want radioactive strawberries turning people into superheroes anytime soon.
Psh, Speak for yourself.
Well, yeah, maybe that would finally draw the attention we need to good old down-home farming.
Speaking of drawing attention to good old down-home farming, that brings us to the point that the debaters spent most of the time discussing.
You mean getting kids onto the farm, though the debaters didn't actually mention radioactive strawberries, so maybe we'll have to throw that in there next time.
Well, what was discussed was how to incentivize kids to stay out on the farm, or have a new generation of kids that want to stay on the farm outright. While getting people back on the farm is something that a lot of people see as trendy and for the hipsters, there's a real opportunity here to capitalize on the ideals of the younger generation.
Which brings up a great point that the debaters discussed. That is, this regionalized, smaller production farming happens to line up with the younger generation's viewpoints.
Maybe we should explain those viewpoints then.
Yeah, not everyone may be born-again hippies, so these viewpoints tend to align with higher ethical standards, such as sourcing food locally.
Smaller-scale operations are attractive to the younger generation, as are the seemingly controversial and, at times, contradicting fads of organics and modern farming technologies like transgenic crops.
See, I mean, the craze isn't just Snapchatting a selfie with your alpaca or your organic hydroponically grown kale smoothie.
Well, it's that too.
Yeah, I'm all for that. Plus, we can't seem to escape the influence of Food Network these days, you know, now that Rachel Ray has infiltrated Standard Cable. But really, the debaters discussed how sociocultural factors, such as the prominence of food in pop culture, have increased the popularity of agriculture for younger generations.
I fully support binging on Good Eats on Netflix.
No, but in all honesty, we're talking more farmers markets, easier access to organic foods, and the reemergence of schoolyard gardens. All these things have brought a lot of attention to the importance of buying local products, or at least changing the way we think about our food.
And Dr. Hamm points out that this mindset is actually expanding beyond farmers markets and is starting to reach wholesale and retail stores. It's turning into a marketing strategy, to be honest.
The debaters recognize that large processing companies such as General Mills and Kellogg's have established small organic branches, if you will, which have resulted in better distribution of organic products.
This increased popularity has started to influence policy, which creates a better environment for food establishments, such as food hubs and those farmers markets we've been harping on.
Speaking of, apparently the state of Michigan has really seen the advancement of food development programs in the past decade or so, with initiatives such as the Michigan Food Policy Council and new food businesses popping up all over the state.
It's becoming a new norm.
So we're seeing this interest in youth, but we need to capitalize on this interest.
Some universities are already doing this. Actually, the debaters mentioned that Rutgers University and Michigan University are two large schools with student-run organic farms.
Hey, hey, we can't forget the smaller schools either. Shout out to Ursinus College and Eckerd College, who happen to be our alma maters, and also have student-run organic agricultural initiatives.
High schools have also been creating student-run gardens, which apparently have even led to successful entrepreneurial spin-off projects. And our debaters agreed that these were good steps to creating a sustainable food environment for the future.
So, say we are successful at getting kids to the farm. Now, the problem is that we need to provide incentives to keep them there and make this a sustainable lifestyle.
Not only for the young farmers, but for the communities themselves. Some of these communities are new to farming, and they don't have the proper infrastructure or technology to handle or do this sort of thing. Or, if some sort of infrastructure does exist, it's typically suited for larger scale production, and therefore inapplicable to this smaller community-centered agriculture.
And this is where national governmental agencies or the private sector can step in to help. And the debaters did talk about the national regulation during the debate. In fact, they talked about the Farm Bill modification to promote fruit and vegetable farming instead of just grains and cotton. They thought this would be doable since the Farm Bill is currently in a stage of change anyway, and would induce a more appropriate ideological infrastructure for agricultural needs.
Debaters also pointed out that certain cost-free loans must be provided in order to support the implementation of technology programs throughout the world. This would ensure that new technologies actually make it out to the farms, and that healthy foods can be made available to even low-income populations.
Speaking of infrastructure, academia could also have a hand in inciting these changes.
Dr. Hamm actually suggested that research and development be explored at the academic and private institutional levels to give us these infrastructural developments that we need.
In addition, academic research can seek to find new agricultural products to better diversify food supplies, also to respond to market challenges and combat competition with China.
Actually, this has been done in the state of Michigan and resulted naturally in entrepreneurial opportunities.
And of course, academia could offer mentorships, various training opportunities, and even degree programs to improve all forms of farming education, which is something that the debater community seemed to agree upon.
But the debaters also recognize that the current reality is that a large portion of our future farmers will be from immigrant populations that may or may not have farming backgrounds.
There is even a policy suggestion that we should expand current programs which provide opportunities for migrant farm workers to become independent farm owners.
So the takeaway is that this problem quickly becomes multifaceted and that agricultural aid programs would have to be tailored to each community's needs, whether you're talking about different locations within the United States or comparing affluent and less affluent regions all over the world.
Especially because this younger generation that we're trying to inspire to build up this new farming community is, for the most part, still paying off hundreds of thousands of dollars in college loans, potentially. We have to make sure that the technologies they're using are both accessible and affordable.
And it's important to note that the land itself has to be both financially and physically obtainable. There's already a high demand for farmland in areas like Western New York and the American Midwest.
But guys, it's all well and good to improve infrastructure and technology, but until we establish much-needed public-private partnerships to ensure the viability of smaller-scale production, you know, what's actually drawing the kids back to agriculture?
This is all sort of a pipe dream.
Exactly. The debaters recognize that this is all easier said than done. No consensus regarding what these partnerships would actually look like was reached, so the conversation continues.
If you have any ideas, we'd love to hear them.
For sure. And you can check out the complete debate summary centered around Dr. Hamm's paper on our website in the free publication that came out of the Food and Environment Conference. And if you want in on this conversation, tweet us at ISGPTweets, hashtag ISGPForum, or hit us up on Facebook or via email, and your comments may be featured on a future podcast.
Thanks for socializing with science today. See you next time.
The Institute on Science for Global Policy, or ISGP, is a nonprofit organization that convenes international meetings bringing together scientists, policymakers, industry leaders, students, and other stakeholders to discuss pertinent scientific issues facing society. The ISGP has no opinions and does not lobby. Therefore, the preceding podcast reflects the views expressed by the presenters and debaters at our conference. For more information, please visit our website at www.scienceforglobalpolicy.org. Thank you.